We're on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
Good afternoon. Oops, that's not what my copy says. I'm opening the show with, I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. Welcome to the Fantastic Forum. We're here to excite, entertain, elucidate, and educate you with news, information, and interesting discussion about your favorite geeks. Thank you for having tuned in. You know, I like to change it up a little bit. I always say, good afternoon! And, well, hopefully it is a good afternoon for you, but I like to change it up anyway. Excuse me. We'll begin with some genre-related news prior to the start of today's discussion. In the aftermath of its acquisition of the Fox Entertainment portfolio, Disney engaged in another round of layoffs. This most recent action canned close to 60 employees in media distribution. Among the casualties are Fox TV Distribution's worldwide marketing executive vice president and Fox Home Entertainment's worldwide marketing and strategy senior vice president. Earlier last month, Disney's studio laid off what has been described as some key executives in its production and visual effects departments. The Venice Film Festival premiere of The Joker saw the movie receive a lengthy standing ovation. Apparently it was in excess of 8 minutes. Director Todd Phillips and star Joaquin Phoenix were on hand to bask in the display of adoration from the appreciative crowd. Anticipation for the film has been growing, and the two press screenings and red carpet premiere at Venice were packed. Reviews have been strong so far. Variety film critic Owen Gleiberman wrote that Joaquin Phoenix is astonishing as a mentally ill geek who becomes the killer clown Joker in Todd Phillips' Neo Taxi Driver Knockout, the rare comic book movie that expresses what's happening in the real world. Ooh, high praise indeed. And it was announced earlier today that the film had won the coveted Golden Lion Award, which is the festival's top prize. Now, while the movie is part of the DC Comics universe, it is a standalone and does not include Batman or any other superheroes. The Joker opens nationwide on October 4th. A couple of trailer releases in which you'll be interested. One of the last to come out of the D23 was the trailer for Star Wars Episode 9, and James Cameron's Terminator Dark Fate dropped late last week. Both can be seen on the Fantastic Forum Facebook page at facebook.com/Fantastic Forum. And while you're there, like us and follow us on Twitter, too. We love to be liked and we like to be followed. Terminator Dark Fate opens in theaters on November 1st, and The Rise of Skywalker opens on December 20th. Historically, September was when all the new television programs debuted. So, quite naturally, we have some anniversaries this week. September 4th marked the 44th anniversary of the premiere of Jerry and Sylvia Anderson's Space, 1999. September 5th was 27 years since the debut of Batman, the animated series. And it was 23 years ago, on September 6th, that Superman, the animated series, was broadcast on Kids WB. Some sad news this week is Terrence Dix, British author, screenwriter, and producer, best known for his work as a writer and script editor on the BBC's long-running Doctor Who, died on September 2nd. Dix was 84 years old. A sign of the strange and volatile times in which we exist, as it was reported last week in the Nashville Tennessean, that J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter book series has been removed from the library of the St. Edward Catholic School for containing, and I quote, curses and spells, unquote. Parents were notified by Reverend Dan Rehill in an email. The message went on to say, and I quote, these books present magic as both good and evil, which is not true, but in fact, a clever deception. The curses and spells used in the books are actual curses and spells, which when read by a human being, risk conjuring evil spirits into the presence of the person reading the text, unquote. This is real stuff. I am not making this up. This is absolutely true. 2019 in Nashville, Tennessee. Rehill goes on to say in the email that he consulted several exorcists in the U.S. and Rome who recommended removing the books. Rebecca Hamill, the superintendent of schools for the Catholic Diocese of Nashville, confirmed the removal and noted that the Catholic Church does not have an official position on the Harry Potter books. She went on to say that in this situation, the school's pastor has the final say. Hamill said she does think the Harry Potter books are still on the shelves in other school libraries throughout the diocese. And in fact, they were in St. Edward's old school library, which was used through the end of the 2018-2019 school year. So, we'll be talking a little bit about that and more with my expert group of panelists today. Joining me in studio is author, reviewer, all-around nice guy, former Wildstorm editor, and geez, you work for somebody else. You work for a bunch of other people too.
Well, Chaos Comics.
And, oh, okay.
I worked for Activision, and
there you go. All right. Yeah. All right. None other than Drew Bittner.
Hey,
thanks, Drew. Okay, and joining us through the miracle of technology, the genius behind the Great Geek Refuge podcaster, comic author himself. We have coming to us live, it's Mike Lunsford. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, so it was a horror comic that you did, and the name of it escapes me. I want to blurt out a name, but in case it's wrong, I'm just going to ask you.
It is Ethan Stone, P.I.
Ethan Stone! Okay, that was not the name I was thinking, so that's a good thing. But I read the stuff. It was great stuff, you know?
Well, thank you.
It was great stuff. Well, I appreciate you. So, anyway, hey, you guys heard, because what I think I want to lead with, only because in this theater of the absurd, that business about the Harry Potter books being removed from the school library of St. Edward's Catholic School over in Nashville, Tennessee. Just to me, that sort of takes the cake. Mm. And so, where we happen to be in this world now is that we are beset on all sides, and basically, we are exposed to censorship. And I would expect that, because that was pretty crazy, you know, that whole business about how this reverend who is the pastor of the school, you know, is consulted exorcists and, you know, all this other stuff. I mean, it was just wacky, you know. Anyway, but I'm just curious what you guys thought about that.
Mike, you want to go first?
Sure. I think that it is quite possibly the most absurd, ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Because if these books, let's just, for the sake of argument, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's just say that these books were about had spells in them that you could conjure things and that you could do things with them, there would be an entire generation of 20-somethings and 30-somethings flying around on damn broomsticks right now. this is so absurd. It's so ridiculous. They obviously never read these books because the books have no – there's nothing – it is about the struggle of good versus evil. In fact, in our current day and age with the absurd person that's in – the White House right now and the way that the media is skewed. I mean, like Harry Potter is literally almost like it's like the Republican Party read Harry Potter and was like, hey, that's a really good idea. But on the flip side, let's follow their game plan. We'll put somebody in power that will tell us that the media is wrong. The young people will be the ones that are screaming the loudest to try to like overthrow this horrible regime. Like it's so absurd that any religious group would step up and be like, you know, this book about wizards that's like, hey, you need to be responsible with the things that you have and try to leave a good leave something good for the next generation, like leave some sort of legacy for them and destroy evil. That's the one that they want to pick up and tear apart. That's the book they want to ban. It just that's the reason. If they said, hey, we're going to ban Harry Potter because it's distracting kids and they need to be focused on their studies. Okay, cool. I'm fine with that. Like, I would be okay with that. Where I disagree, I think reading is reading to a certain extent. But, like, to say that it's evil and that it's giving kids spells that they can conjure and he consulted exorcists. First off, there's no demonic possession, really, in the entire books. I mean, there's a few scenes where there's someone who is tainted by evil, but it's why would you consult an exorcist? It just makes no sense whatsoever. I feel like this is all just a ploy to try to get this particular school in Tennessee some attention. That's all they're trying to.
I see. Boost enrollment, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Because somebody out there thinks Harry Potter's evil, and they're also dumb and shouldn't be listened to.
My take is that you know Catholics are usually much more sensible than this, but you know a Catholic school in Nashville probably has to go that extra mile of crazy just to try and make sure they get enough enrollment, you know, so they have to fit in with the community. And let's be honest, this is crazy. This is the same playbook they were running in the 1970s when they're hysterical over Dungeons and Dragons and rock and roll music and all these other things. They were going to destroy the youth and blah, 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 and all these crusades to burn books and burn records and all this, and it amounted to absolutely nothing. And you get these fools and freaks who turn out and, you know, rant and rave. And, you know, a couple months later, it's all forgotten. But the fact is, it still inflicts on these kids a sense of, you know, that, oh, there are bad books. There are things you shouldn't be reading, which, of course, makes them want to read them more. So they're going to go to the library and, you know, check them out and be all the more interested in them. And all this, you know, pastor is doing is making himself look like a complete fool. So, you know, it's like my feeling is, yeah, this Catholic school has the right to do what they want to do. It's their school. They have the right to create policy as they want to. And we have the right to laugh at them and think that they're absolutely ridiculous. So,
yeah. Well, that's part of the reason that I went ahead and read that passage from the actual email, because, I mean, jeepers creepers. You know, it was just I and when I saw it, I had to go run and show my wife, because my wife and kids are, I guess we're all going to hell, but my wife and kids are huge fans of the Harry Potter books and the movies. And I, in fact, part of the reason that I had to start reading them was because I was left out. And you know, you don't want to be the only, the odd man out in the house who doesn't know any of that stuff.
I know that.
And anyway, so, and in fact, I, having seen all the movies and having read all of the books, I have to say that, and we're going to have to do like a special Harry Potter show or something, because, well, I digress, but I like the books way more than the movies. I refer to the movies as Harry Potter Light, and they're great, and Rowling grows as an author. I mean, you'll read that first book. I mean, the whole journey of these kids, it's a coming-of-age story. It's a story about the struggle between good versus evil. And I tell you what, you know, the And this is kind of funny to me, too. I mean, but we can go off on a few tangents, because what the heck? It's my show. Oh, you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Drew Bittner and Mike Lunsford. We are currently talking about how the Harry Potter books have been removed from the library of St. Edward's Catholic School in Nashville due to, and I quote, curses and spells, unquote. So, all right, but here's the thing. So, Lord Voldemort, and I know I'm not supposed to be saying his name, I said, he who shall not be named, this character, and I've read a lot of stuff, but I gotta say, Voldemort is the most evil character I have ever seen in fiction, bar none. Okay? I mean, this guy is totally evil. And as an aside, yeah, and I'm afraid I'm going to get political. So all you people who tuned into this show because you're like, oh, he doesn't talk politics. All right. So,
welcome to Fantastic Politics.
Yeah, well, you know, so my wife and I were laughing because I was saying that, she said she would vote for a ham sandwich before she'd vote for the current president. I have always said I would vote for Bobo the Wino. Over the current president. But I was trying to think of villains who I would... Now, and I have to say, in a contest between Donald Trump and Voldemort, I would probably vote for Donald Trump. I gotta say.
I'd vote Voldemort.
Ooh!
Yeah. Because he gets things done.
You know, the whole thing with the pure bloods and all that, that I would, you know... But everybody else that I came up with, Darth Vader, I would vote for him. Dr. Doom, I would vote for him. I mean, everybody Emperor else Palpatine. That I came up... Who?
Emperor Palpatine.
Oh.
Palpatine, yeah.
I don't know. Well, that's another one.
Well, we see what Palpatine's rule is like, so, you know, that's not great.
That's true, you know, I mean...
Yeah, but also, just like Voldemort, he gets stuff done. and he may have been garbage, but he had a plan.
And if you're in the military, there's a military budget there for you, I tell you.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and he...
for days.
Absolutely spent money on the military. And you're right, he did have a plan. And it was an excellent plan in the sense that it came together exactly as he prescribed.
And yet, I don't think he had a plan after that.
Well, I guess we'll see coming up. But yeah, anyway, though, but fabulous books. If you haven't read them, they're wonderful and they're very rich. And like I said, Rowling improves over time. And I just can't imagine why anybody would want to ban books. I mean, I guess it's all part of an organized sort of plan to suppress intellect, to generally control people and institutions, to suppress the development of education in the sense that you don't want kids to learn certain things or to ask hard questions. You know, it's just it's very disappointing.
Well, you don't want kids to ask questions that your religion can't answer. So,
well, yeah. I am a religious person. I am a Christian person, and I haven't had an issue. I mean, I haven't had a problem in balancing my faith and my fandom and my political experience. You know, I mean,
that's cool.
You know, so anyway, and I guess some people, you know, some people do, but I guess it depends on what sort of religious dogma to which one adheres.
I think when you get that far down the rabbit hole, you're not really looking to balance your many different aspects of your life. You're kind of focusing on just the one, which may or may not be, you know, effective for you.
As my daughter says, good point. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, look, so I think we've about beaten that dead horse about as much as we can. I'd like to move on only because I think a lot of people may not really be... I mentioned that Terrence Dix had passed away. And I don't know how much people really appreciate... this guy's affiliation. I mean, if you're a Doctor Who fan, and I know, Drew, you know about this cat. You know about him, don't you?
Sort of.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Sort of. Okay. All right. I might have the opportunity here to educate you a little bit on this. But no, he was I mean, that's part of the reason that he is remembered as fondly as he is. Get this. The Doctor Who news page described Terrence Dix as, and I quote, arguably the most prolific contributor to Doctor Who, unquote. Now, when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow. You know, it's like I got to find out a little bit more about this guy. But like I said, writer, script editor, producer. And this was the classic series of Doctor Who, as opposed to, because a lot of people, you know, they know about
the reboot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it is a reboot. It really is. That is exactly the way to describe it. But let me
tell you, young kids, something, because it used to be like a soap opera, because it was on videotape and you'd tune in and it looked just like a soap opera.
But you know, it used to bother me when they'd go outside, and because the interiors were shot on videotape, but the exteriors were shot on film, and it was just the most bizarre thing. I guess those video cameras didn't go outside.
We're going to step into the other world now.
Yeah, nah, no joke. Anyway, but yeah, Dix earned his first writing credit for the show when he co-wrote the 10-part serial, because they were all serials, The War Games, which concluded the series' sixth season, and the second Doctor, Doctor's tenure. That was Patrick Troughton. So that serial introduced the concept of the Time Lords and initiated the Doctor's exile to Earth, which, of course, as many of you know, would be a major theme in the third Doctor's tenure. So anyway, but Dix was also the uncredited co-writer of the earlier serial, The Seeds of Death, back in 1969. Because he rewrote the original guy's scripts. And, you know, he later formed a highly productive working relationship with producer Barry Letts, and he served as script editor on all of Letts' five seasons as series producer from 1970 to 1974. So, yeah, you know, I mean, he also published, in fact, his first book was The Making of Doctor Who, which was a history of the production of the television series. And even after he stepped down as script editor, he continued his association with the show, writing four scripts for his successor. Those were Robot in 1975, which was Tom Baker's first outing as the fourth Doctor, The Brain of Morbius, The Horror of Fang Rock, which is a personal favorite of mine, and State of Decay. And anyway, but a whole bunch of other stuff. And so I wanted to, you know, give this guy a few props and just take a moment to remember Terrence Dix. So, Mike, is Doctor Who something that you've gotten into at all? Is that one of your geeks?
I haven't, no. And I don't disparage anybody who has. I know some people love essentially ripping on things that they're not really into. But I'm of a different mindset. Like, I'm the type of person who just, I just enjoy seeing people enjoy things. Like, I know that sounds strange, but like,
not at all.
When I see people get nerdy and geeky about Doctor Who, when I see them, like, if I'm at a convention or something like that, and David Tennant is there, or Matt Smith is there, like any of the doctors, and you just see how excited they get. I dig that, man. Mm-hmm. Like, that these people were this into that show. And like, mm-hmm. I've seen a little bit of it. I saw the one where I can't remember exactly what season it was, but there was the Doctor who is he's a Time Lord, and there's another Time Lord called the Master.
Yes,
and the
that's Master, his archenemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the Master basically like tricks all of like Parliament to like elect him Prime Minister, and then kills them all in this very similar to Blue Velvet scene where he's got this mask where he's covering his face, and like it was really captivating. I was like, wow, this is a really, really well done series. But then also too, at one point, like, he's lying in the Doctor's arms getting ready to die, and the Doctor's like, I can save you. He's like, no, I won't let you. I just want to see the look on your face as I die in your arms. And I was like, damn, like, that was some intense stuff, but I mean, incredibly well written. So like, I never disparaged the show. I just never really got into it. What I've seen has been excellent.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cool. And I appreciate your progressive attitude when it comes to that, because, you know, a lot of people, as you said, just want to simply disparage something that they don't understand. Hey, so moving right along, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the anniversaries that have been this week. most notably, because, hey, Space 1999, it is what it is. Either you got into it or you didn't. That was 44 years ago. There are only two seasons. You know, it's one of those things. People love them or they hate them. But there was Superman, the animated series, and Batman, the animated series. And I have to say, fellas, both of these made a profound impact on me. You could say they changed my life in some ways, because Superman and Batman have always been my favorite superheroes from when I was a little boy. And the characterizations of Superman and Batman in these cartoons, in my estimation, have been the closest to what is represented in the comic books than anything, than any other media that I have ever seen of these characters. And the fact that they were serialized, multi-part things, you had an opportunity to develop these characters, to kind of get into them. And it was just beautiful. And a wonderful homage of sorts to Max and Dave Fleischer's 1938 Superman cartoons. In fact, Batman the Animated Series, which debuted first, you know, the producers made a concerted effort to sort of, again, in homage, to sort of mimic the style of these. And that's another thing. The Max and Dave Fleischer cartoons have passed into the public domain at this point. You can look that stuff up on the internet. And let me tell you, if you do nothing else today, if you are unfamiliar with the Max and Dave Fleischer Superman cartoons, because there were, I want to say there were about 20 or 30 of them. You know, there weren't that many.
Yeah. Not a lot.
Yeah. But, and they were all real short. I mean, we're talking like 5 minutes or something. Look up the Mechanical Monsters.
Yeah.
That, you want to check that out. I mean, I can only imagine what 1938 audiences, how they reacted to that. I mean, that is real live superhero action in 1938.
Yeah.
Darndest thing I've ever seen. But but all that to say that these were fantastic, fantastic works. And I'd set my VCR, because that's what you did in those days. And every day when I got home, I would sit down and I would watch me some Batman the Animated Series. And I was never disappointed. And frequently, I would gasp and cringe and react as I'm watching this stuff. It was just fabulous. And I'm wondering what you guys feeling about these. Oh, and the fact that all of this led to more stuff, including Justice League. But I'm wondering how you guys felt about it.
Oh, yeah, Drew? I feel the same way. I think Batman, the animated series, laid the groundwork for WB to have a really, really robust animation section. It did grow into Superman. These shows led into Justice League and then Justice League Unlimited. They brought in Green Lantern after that. They had Justice League Action, which has been running more recently. And it's sort of the style of the characters that refuses to die. It's the one that everyone keeps coming back to. It's the one that everyone looks at and says, that's when they did it right. Like all these other versions of Batman, there have been other Batman TV shows on the air since then, like, you know, Batman Brave and the Bold, The Batman, and so on. But none of them became iconic the way that Batman the Animated Series did. And that's for a reason. It's because it's got great writing, great animation. It was really like a masterclass in how to do Batman in this day and age, make him a great character, make him all ages, make him accessible, and just do terrific storytelling with this character.
Mike?
There came a point after Tim Burton's Batman when everybody was wondering, well, what are they going to do next other than a sequel? I mean, like, because it was that big.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, kids like me, I was only 7 when the first Batman movie came out. It hit me at the exact right time. Because, one, I fell in love with the first Batman movie. The second one was okay. It was fine. And then we got the animated series. And going back and reading the old comic books and kind of learning who Batman was and what he really is, and not just these strange depictions that we've gotten from other interpretations, I realized that the animated series is actually probably the best I would say, like, core of who this character actually is, of who Batman is, of who Bruce Wayne is, of who Robin and Dick Grayson, like, all of these main staple characters and who they are and what they stand for. And you can watch those as your basis for everything that you need to know for Batman. And the same for the Superman series, too. Like, the voice acting, I mean, Tim Daly as Superman and Kevin Conroy as Batman, like, those just, they nailed those voices. But then also, too, it's, I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, Heath Ledger was the best Joker. Jack Nicholson was the best. I disagree as Mark Hamill. Like, those are those characters. Like, if I'm reading a comic book now, I read them in those voices in my head. Mm. Like, that's how I hear Batman. That's how I hear the Joker, because I feel like those are, quote unquote, correct. Those are the right voices for them.
Mm. Well, and I appreciate what you have essentially said about being part of a new generation that was essentially introduced to Batman through these cartoons. You know, I mean, everybody has got their point of entry. I mean, for me, at roughly around that age, I was just a little bit younger, but it was the 1966 Batman TV series, you know, and that was a completely different Batman.
Very different.
That was 50s Batman. I mean, yeah, that was the Caped Crusader. You got the Dark Knight, you know, yeah. Which is, you know, much closer to what appears in the comics. Anyway, though, look, that musical cue means that it is time for us to take a short break because, of course, Fantastic Forum comes to you by virtue of the wonderful community media station WERA 96.7 FM, which is also available streaming online at WERA. So make it your business today to find out about community radio, about community media, and how you can get involved. Because let me tell you something, it is of the community, for the community, by the community. And you are part of the community. Anyway, look, we're going to step aside for a moment while we acknowledge the wonderful underwriters without whom we could not put this radio station on the air. I'm also going to take the opportunity to promote some of the other fine WERA shows coming up later tonight. But stick around because I got a real surprise for you coming up in the second half of the show. And we're back here on the Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM. We are your community radio station. We are Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today in the studio by Drew Bittner and through the miracle of technology by Mike Lunsford of the Great Geek Refuge and the special treat that I have for you. We are also joined by comics historian and collector Warren Bernard, who also happens to be the executive director of the Small Press Expo, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary next week. So thanks for coming back, everybody. And Warren, please, you have to tell us a little bit of, I mean, you know, because I know you've been a guest on the show before, both with some of your SPX colleagues and also, you know, just talking about the passion that we both enjoy. But this is a special show for this year. Kind of, it's coming up next week. It's going to be in Rockville. Don't believe any of that Bethesda North crap. It's in Rockville. And you can find out all about it if you visit the website at SPX.
No, it's not. SmallPressExpo.com.
Small. There you go. See, I'm glad I have you on the show to be able to correct my mistake. SmallPressExpo.com. So tell us a little, because I have described this particular convention as more of a literary event, sort of than what people traditionally think of as a comic convention. So please, tell us just a little, for the uninitiated, tell us just a little bit about SPX and the significance of this 25th anniversary show.
Well, we are the longest-running indie comic show in the United States, indie comics festival in the United States, and a whole bunch of festivals were actually modeled after us, like TCAF up in Toronto, MOCA up in New York, and LCAP, actually, in London, amongst others, who looked at SPX and said, we need one of those for our city. So that 25 years is actually a very long shadow weekend, which we're particularly proud. And it's interesting you mentioned we're more like a literary festival, because just last weekend, I had the pleasure of introducing Rita Telgemeier to a crowd of no less than 4,000 on the main stage of the National Book Festival. And Rita is going to grace us with her presence at SPX this coming weekend, of which we are totally thrilled. She got started at SPX selling mini comics for 50 cents a piece.
I was not aware of that.
I didn't know that either. That's awesome.
Yes, and the print run on her next book, Guts, which is due out this coming week, the week after SPX, is a mere million hardback copies.
Ooh, a mirror.
she's been moderately successful.
she's doing okay.
Oh, yeah.
One of those up-and-comers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keeping the roof over her head.
It was a true honor to introduce her. Plus, I have never spoken to 4,000 people before at one time live. 400 or 500, maybe. But it was the equivalent to, just to give you some scale and scope, Constitution Hall doesn't hold 4,000 people.
Wow.
And the Lisner and Warner Theater together don't hold 4,000 people.
Wow.
And yet, Rada filled every single seat. And that shows you how big.
Yeah.
So she's coming. Chris Ware, who's considered a very literary in the way he draws and the way he tells stories.
Acme Warehouse,
Jaime Hernandez. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Acme Warehouse? Is that Chris Ware?
Acme Warehouse, exactly. Exactly. So Chris is coming. Eleanor Davis, Jaime Hernandez, who, if you've read any of his stuff on Love and Rockets, he's very literary. Ed Pitzker, who just got finished doing X-Men Grand Design, he's coming to SPX. Eddie Campbell is coming back. Box Brown, who has done, I think it's now his fourth nonfiction graphic novel that's been very, very successful. So, and then my old buddy Keith Knight is coming back. And he just got a...
series. TV series, yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So his Hulu series has been opted, I think, for, I think it's 10 episodes it was opted for. It's either 10 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he is going to emcee the Ignatz Awards this year.
Oh, that should be a really fun time. Well, and I'm delighted that you mentioned the Ignatz Awards, because, you know, the SPX's own festival prize, and that actually informs many of the other comics awards that are given out, apparently. So,
yes, well, it's taken some time, but I have to give credit in particular to San Diego Comic-Con for really expanding out their view of comics and looking at the indie comics world there, both in terms of the categories they've got and the people they're nominating in the different categories. They clearly were looking at Ignatz and what we've been doing for the last N number of years.
Clearly.
To go ahead and bring indie comics into their realm. So a lot of kudos to them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, no, it's going to be big. It'll be 25 years. I wasn't there at the beginning, so I only got involved with SPX, maybe about 15, 16 years ago. But this is my ninth one, so I've now officially gone ahead and shared over one-third of all the SPXs that have ever existed.
Yeah, now you have certainly made a mark. Now, I want people to understand the part of the significance of this is the Small Press Expo is a comics convention festival event that focuses on small and individual publishers. You know, it's not like you won't see some, you know, larger publishing houses there. But, you know, it's all about, and in fact, what you mentioned about Rena Telgemeier and how she got her start. You know, there are people who are putting these fanzines together and little individual, in some cases, they're stapling them together themselves. They're running this thing off at Kinko's and whatever. And, you know, I happen to believe that a grassroots kind of thing like this is key in sequential storytelling. I mean, this is because Hey, you know, the comics will come and go, characters, and especially with the splash that a lot of these things make. But, you know, this is what the institution, the genre, is all about. People telling stories, in many cases, about themselves, in many cases, about stories that aren't being told anywhere else. You know?
Yes, that's true. And we have, the other thing, besides the storytelling thing, we also have a very diverse bunch of creators coming to SPX. You can see that as you walk through the room. And the other thing that SPX also does is, and a lot of people don't know this, but we're actually considered a training ground for the animation studios out in L.A.
Yeah, that came as a surprise to me. But go, preach, man, preach. Talk about, because Cartoon Network, and no, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. Go. You do it.
Well, for instance, last year we had Rebecca Sugar of Steven Universe as one of our special guests. Well, one of the places she got discovered was her doing her own mini comics. She's from here in Bethesda at SPX. There are people at Nickelodeon. There are people at Cartoon Network. Well, that's where Rebecca is. We've got Lisa Hanwalt, who used to sell her mini comics at SPX, is now out at Netflix. And I forgot what the name of her new show is, but she had BoJack Horseman. Mm-hmm. She's got a new one coming up. So and there must probably be, you know, somewhere like 25 or 30 people that have gone from SPX out to the animation studios, because the animation studios were sending talent scouts out to SPX starting about a decade ago.
And I don't know why I was surprised about that, you know, given the volume of talent and the broad interest in these genres. You know, I mean, this stuff is like modern mythology now. And the fact that these major industries have recognized that SPX can be mined for talent, you know, that they can put on their networks. And I think that's just fabulous. I mean, it sort of raises the profile not only of the show itself, but of the various very talented creators who happen to be a part of it. So, you know, that's wonderful.
Definitely. Well, I mean, shows like this are a wonderful proving ground for new talent. And they are a place to show where people can write stories and create characters and show the skills that they have, and that makes them desirable to the animation studios and all these others to say, you know, hey, you can actually do this really, really well. We don't have to train you or handhold you. We'll just take you as you are. So,
yeah, and there were a lot, for instance, there was probably easily a dozen people from the SPX community that worked under Venture Time at one time or another. Luke Pearson has Hildy as a Netflix cartoon now. And he's been to SPX a couple of different times. So, yeah, it's actually pretty mind-boggling. The people that, one, that the animation studios actually came into SPX and did this kind of thing, and then, two, the number of people that have gone from SPX over to there. It's really pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, we're, you know, we have a lot of stuff. And then you also have people like, you know, Raina. You were talking about stapling mini comics together. That's what she used to do. And Ed Pisker, you know, he got his start. Mm-hmm. One of the places he got his start with SPX. He was putting out WYSIWYG and some of his other mini comics, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And now look at him.
Mm. Well, one other thing that I want to stress is, you know, because there is a... I mean, in some ways, Warren, you and the various other members of the SPX Executive Committee have really drank the Kool-Aid on this particular event, because I frequently talk to people, you know, either on the fringes or outside, and they talk about how different the Small Press Expo could be. I mean, how much bigger it could be, or the fact that you guys could easily charge a lot more for admission. You know, for the weekend, and you know, but there's a commitment, you know, not only to keeping the event affordable so that attendees can come out, but so that they can spend some money on the mini comics and the fanzines and the, you know, the various published books that, you know, you can get in the huge dealer's room. And that's another thing, because, you know, I understand that there is a lottery to be able to get into the dealer's room, and this is held up at the Marriott Bethesda North Hotel and Conference Center, which is the largest ballroom in Montgomery County. And it's still packed, and there are still people who don't get in. I mean, it's just this. It's astounding.
It is.
Yeah, the lottery, about half the tables go to the lottery. We try to get a little more than that. And then, you know, you've got to have your publishers, right? You've got to have Fantagraphics and Top Shelf and Silver Sprocket and all these other people that, you know, bring their guests with them. And then, of course, you have an invite list, okay? So there are some people that, you know, Keith Knight, we can't not invite Keith, okay?
Well, you could. It just wouldn't be smart.
You know, I the conversation would not go well if I called Keith. So, Keith, I'm sorry, this year you have to go through the lottery. it really wouldn't work. Okay. So we are very conscious about people coming in and spending money, and also the amount of money that are spent by the creators at their tables, and how much they spend for the hotel rooms and things like that. Mm. Because, you know, making comics is not exactly the business it was when Milton Caniff was pulling down, you know, $75,000 a year in 1950, or however much he was making.
Mm.
Okay, so we're very conscious of all that. That's the reason why we like this facility, because we can't keep costs down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and look, I recognize that this is because it's a nonprofit that puts this event on, you know, which is part of the reason that I can tell everybody to go to smallpressexpo.com, buy a ticket, find out more about this wonderful show, support it. But part of the reason that I lead with that is because there is an executive committee. Everybody volunteers, no pay, doing this out of the goodness of their hearts, and, you know, because they believe in it. And I want to commend all of them, but I also want to take the opportunity to give a special commendation to you, Warren, because as the executive director, you're the one who sets the tone and receives an inordinate amount of blame when things don't go the way that somebody thinks they should, or takes exception to anything, you know, and you have really done a bang-up job in terms of putting this show on and leading the troops in this thing, and you know, I'm just very grateful for all of the effort that you have put into that.
Well, to say I appreciate that is understatement. Thank you very much. It does make me feel better, especially now with like a week to go. I feel like I've been on meth for the last like 3 weeks now. So, thank you very much for the sentiment. I do appreciate it. Yes, there are those days where you sit there and all you can do is roll your eyes, going, "What can I do wrong now?"
Well, if you feel underappreciated, we have a good old Fantastic Forum. Round of applause for you. And you know, and anyway, you certainly deserve that and a whole lot more. So anyway, but hey, please, we're almost out of time. But I please give us a shout out for the website again, and how people can get tickets and find out more about this wonderful event.
Yes, I go to smallpressexpo.com, and we also have advanced tickets available out on Eventbrite. And if you go out to smallpressexpo.com, go look for tickets in the menu. And that'll lead you out to Eventbrite to get early tickets.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And we're looking forward. We've got 30 special guests this year because it's our 25th anniversary. We had to have a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 22 panels and 14 workshops and 600 creators.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I have, I believe myself to be particularly discriminating when it comes to the comics types of events that I attend. But I got to say, I have never had a bad time at SPX. And some of the notable and noteworthy guests that you can find at an event like this, you know, it's absolutely astounding. You know, I mean, people like Jules Pfeiffer and Congressman John Lewis, and, you know, I mean, all sorts of folks come out to this thing, you know, I mean, and it's just, it's wonderful to be able to, you know, see all the various people who come out and interact with them. Now, you won't see a lot of costumes and this kind of thing like you do at some conventions, but you know, you will get a very enriching and comics experience. It's very diverse. Like I said, you know, if you are part of any underrepresented culture, then, you know, this is, it's kind of the place for you. And like I said, Warren Bernard, you lead all of this, and you know, it's the way it is because of you. So, you know, and well, the wonderful efforts of everybody else on the various committees and everybody who works to put the thing together. But thanks for your leadership.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you very much for having me on your show. I love it.
Well, I appreciate that you carved out the time to come on, because with only 6 days, actually less than 6 days now to go, you know, you must be spread about as thin as, well, okay, I can't come up with an analogy, but you must be spread pretty thin at this point. So thanks for making the time.
Valiant. Send me Valiant.
I'll bring some, my friend. Warren Bernard, collector and comics historian and executive director of the Small Press Expo, which is coming up next week at the Marriott Bethesda North Hotel and Conference Center in Rockville. Warren, thanks again.
Thank you very much. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So that is just about going to do it for us. I wish that I had sort of been able to get to this Joker movie, because, you know, Mike, Drew, I'm sure we had lots to talk about in terms of that.
Did I just read that it won the grand prize at the Venice?
Yes.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I think I said that in the opening, but I was rolling on. And yeah, it did.
So, I mean, that by itself is kind of remarkable. So, yeah, that's worth noticing. I get a strong, like, Taxi Driver, King of Comedy vibe off this thing. So we'll see how that works.
Yeah, there are people jocking it like crazy. And, you know, it isn't frequent that genre movies like this win an award for something other than special effects. But it seems that this one, you know, I mean, there could be Oscar nods all around.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Could be.
You know, and, you know, one... I'm delighted to see a DC movie doing well. I think that there is unfair... The playing field is sort of weighted now in the minds of many fans unfairly in favor of Marvel. And I think a lot of Marvel movies get a pass and are not scrutinized nearly as closely.
I think for spectacle, certainly. I think that for dramatics, DC has plenty of openings to make their mark. So, you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Indeed we shall. Hey, so look, like I said, that's just about going to do it for us today. Make sure that you tune in. If you happen to be in the Arlington area, Fantastic Forum is also a television show. You can catch it on Arlington Independent Media, Comcast Channel 69, Verizon Fios Channel 38, Saturdays and Sunday evenings at 8. It comes on 8 p.m., that is. It comes on other times, too, but, hey, those are like prime slots. I like to talk those up. And if you happen to miss any portion of the first run show, the radio show here that's on from 4 to 5 p.m. on Saturdays, we have a re-air on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m., so you can tune in on Thursday and check that out. And if you're curious about what we are and what we do, you can either catch the podcast version on the Great Geek Refuge. Thank you very much, Mike. Or you can go to the website at fantasticforum.tv. And we've got complete episodes of the TV series. We've got segments broken out, you know, the cool toys, the event coverage, the interviews. We got loads of interviews. And, of course, next week, I'll be at the Small Press Expo. Hopefully you will be, too. But tune in again. Same bat time, same bat station.